In today's episode, I've discussed with Neil DiDona, the VP Marketing at Mountain Ops, about the company's mission to provide quality nutrition and supplements for the outdoor enthusiast. He highlights the importance of partnerships and influencer marketing in their growth strategy, focusing on building an ecosystem of partners who align with their brand values. Neil also emphasizes the need for adaptability and agility in marketing, as well as the importance of analyzing data and defining KPIs. Overall, the conversation showcases the unconventional journey and down-to-earth approach of Neil in his role as head of marketing. Neil shares his background in soccer coaching and his transition to marketing. He discusses his career growth and the challenges he faced along the way. Neil also provides insights into the current microeconomic status in the US and how it has affected his company. He highlights the importance of retention marketing and the evolving role of CMOs and VPs of marketing in the industry. Finally, Neil offers tips and lessons for marketing professionals in the industry. Let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hey, Neil, we have plenty of things to discuss today, really important things, but I want to start with the most important thing of all that I realized about you. You ride bikes as well. You're doing mountain biking, right?
Yeah, no, that is probably one of the more important things in my life, I'd say. I hit the golf course quite frequently, so those are definitely some of the core hobbies. But yeah, I'm super fortunate to live in an awesome area for mountain biking. Just got a full suspension bike not too long ago. So I may or may not have gone over the handlebars a couple weeks ago. So may or not.
Already.
You can't confirm that. There's no video evidence. But yeah, absolutely. It's such an incredible hobby. I think our company and where I work currently allows me to be super active and kind of encourages that. And so the ability to get out of this trail system here in beautiful Boise, Idaho is an awesome experience for sure.
Yeah, Boise, Idaho is really famous in the trails, right? So I would love to be there some point of time because I've been riding for the last 15 years, something that I do every few times a week. So really amazing sports and definitely fits, MTN Ops and the things that you do there right in the company.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have some good mountain bikers as far as ambassadors and stuff. And obviously there's some people that are avid hunters. And so they'll do a bike packing, as they call it. So you actually throw your tent on a bike and go out into the wilderness for a few days.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's and there's some pretty wild people doing some wild things. For me, it's just find me some single track. Let's go down there and see what happens.
Yeah. Obviously, you need to take some MTN supplements to the road, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, gotta get some midnight, some hydrate in there and make sure you're prepared for it. Yeah,
for sure. So tell us more about MTN.
Yeah, so Mountain Ops was started in 2014. So I think really the main goal was to fill a need in the outdoor supplement space. So at that time, there wasn't really a supplement company that was kind of speaking to an outdoor enthusiast, and specifically the hunting audience is something we align really strongly with. There really wasn't a company that kind of aligned that audience and said, hey, you're going to go and pack out an elk. You're on a 3-day hunt. Like, how are you fueling yourself? What does your nutrition look like? What are your, ways you're preparing your body for that in the off seasons when you can't hunt? Nobody was really speaking to that. And I think we actually kind of came in and said, hey, we're going to talk directly to you. We're going to speak your language. We're going to provide you with quality nutrition, quality supplements. So you can go out there and do these things and do them better. And I think that was kind of the main goal. So the mission of Mountain Ops is to improve the lives of individuals and families across the world. I think we're able to do that. One of the cool things that drew me to the brand when I first started almost a year ago was Operation Conquer Hunger. And so Conquer Hunger, we donate a meal to a child in need in every single community kind of across the United States where we can. Through this whole operation, through every purchase, through our website and then wholesale partners as well on Amazon. So it's a really exciting thing that we're able to go do. It's a really incredible event, actually. So I've been to a few of them now, but we get hundreds of people out there and we partner with a partner and we pack meals for hours and hours and hours. And then we drive those. And And I had to drive a gigantic box truck. I don't know if you've driven one of these things down there. Just like, it's not something super easy to drive around. But so through construction zones and everything, and kind of feel like a big, you know, semi-truck driver in there. But was able to drop some of those off at some really needy food banks. Just because food insecurity does hit us here, even, you know, United States, and a lot of people don't think about that too much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was a child that definitely had, you know, struggles with food growing up as well. And so, you know, definitely spoke to my heart. And, but yeah, I've been here a year now. It's an incredible company. We're growing steadily year over year. Definitely an interesting growth trajectory for us, but a super exciting time to be here at Mountain Ops.
Yeah. So Mountain Ops, it started as a digital native company, like directly launching an online store and started the operation.
Yep. Direct to consumer native for sure. I think we've gone through a lot of the major migrations that most D2C organizations that are coming on 10 years have. So going from, you know, starting in the infancy of WooCommerce, migrating to Shopify a few years ago, you know, those kind of things. So we've gone through a lot of those pain points for sure. It actually started our CEO and co-founder, Trevor Farnes, actually kind of started the company with this one product, which is now called Enduro, for its sole purpose to help his dad. His dad was having some challenges with heart issues and some other health issues that was not able to really solve through kind of traditional medicine. And so Trevor got with a lot of people smarter than us and kind of formulated this product to really help support some of those health needs. And luckily, a lot of his health issues kind of went away after, you know, kind of consistently taking that product. And so I think he knew from then on out we were onto something and kind of started a digitally native business around there. Also went to trade shows. Now we're sold in Sportsman's Warehouse, Cabela's, Bass Pro Shop, Scheels, you know, mm-hmm. all in the retail distribution. But mm-hmm. our primary sales channel and about 80% of our revenue is done through our direct-to-consumer site. And then another good 7% or so is done through Amazon.
Got it. So you lead marketing. And I know you also are very, very hands-on, like keyboard level hands-on, right? So you do a lot of things, obviously, on the marketing side of things. What are the key channels that you're using, and which channels are most successful for your business?
Yeah, it's super interesting. When I came on, Mountain Ops was still definitely in the phase of trying to use Meta, trying to use Google to grow, and so trying to use mm-hmm. digitally native platforms to grow. I think at that time, our affiliate revenue was probably 2-3% of our total revenue. And we were really, really hinging heavily. And this is post iOS 14, 15, all the other changes that have gone through there.
Okay.
And we can start to see in some of the data when I first came on, just at the cohort level, of some of the struggles that we were really having, you know, retention of some of these consumers and some of the strategies behind that we were doing there. In our industry specifically, mm-hmm. CPG obviously is huge in returning customers, but supplements definitely is much more about retention than it is, say, about acquisition. Yeah. So the biggest challenge I think that I faced was kind of helping to understand that our major growth trajectory at this point, so getting from 10 to 20 million via digital ads, cool. Getting from 20 to 40 million digital ads is going to be harder. But now to our next step, which is trying to get to 100 million, that's not going to be super done through digital ads. It's going to be done through partnerships. It's going to be done through developing an ecosystem around quality partners, quality affiliates, people that share the brand ethos for sure. And so that's really what we've been focusing on for about the last 9 months. Mm-hmm. Our partnership with Rich Froning has obviously been a huge one. We have our existing partnership with Cam Haynes, who's, you know, obviously famous in his own right, but we're continuing to grow that bench as deep as possible. So that way we can say not as really hinging on digitally native channels and not hinging on trying to find and crack the TikTok nut or trying to, you know, mm-hmm. crack Meta and find the secret sauce that, you know, everybody thinks is out there that just really isn't out there. We're going to do it through growing a partnership ecosystem of people that really share our values. And so that's kind of where our major growth strategy and kind of big shift has been in the last few months.
Yes, yes, that's really the right way to go in a world which is, you know, no first party data on Meta and others. And probably there is a trend of moving and towards it, probably influencer marketing or affiliate partnerships and doing all these type of partnerships. This is also very, very, very important. So this is happening on an online, but also on an offline, like you have a whole omni-channel type of offline online strategies in place?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, you know, we'll go through print publications here locally, mostly regionally, and some of those offline publications. We do have a good solid team, a great sales team that goes to trade shows, that goes to you know, those kind of emphasis. But yeah, it's been interesting to see how some of the offline strategies. I mean, we just went up on a billboard this morning, so like wow. We'll try. Hey. We will try anything and everything to see what we can gain traction with. I think one of my predecessors and someone who I revere strongly told me all marketing is a test. And I think that's, you know, 100% true, because our industry changes all the time. If you go back to 2010, you could build a business overnight to 60 million on Google AdWords, right? You know, that those days are over. So you kind of got to continually be testing into new areas. The part that's interesting, I think, is a lot of people will say, they'll rule out old media types and say, well, we just need to test into the new stuff, the new stuff, the new stuff. Well, you know, you can get results through print publications. You can get results through maybe not traditional radio ads, but obviously podcasts have kind of filled that need. But
I wanted to ask you about radio, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I hear a lot of doing that again, right? So
So there's, I mean, for us, there's nothing off the table as long as we can come up with like a viable thesis of here's how we're going to test this. Here's how we're going to get after it. Once we do that, and we measure the results, and then we say, okay, yeah, this is worth X amount of budget to continue to go into, or, hey man, Neil, you're an idiot. Why the hell did you do that? That was stupid. So and luckily I had that grace to be able to make those mistakes.
It's okay to call yourself stupid because you've tried, right? And it's not working. So it's really a smart move. So you keep experimenting, you keep trying, opening new channels, and then you can close them like as fast as you open them, right? Because you see they are not successful, right?
Exactly. And then sometimes you reopen the ones that you close, and all of a sudden you find some success with it. So I think it's an interesting way to grow these days, for sure. I think, you know, I imagine you talk with people all the time about, you know, their strategies and what they're seeing, and you're probably seeing some common trends. But think about the last time that you've bought something versus an ad versus that somebody has said, hey, this is a product that I truly believe in because of these reasons. I think that kind of credibility atmosphere, but also that like endorsement, it's always been there, right? Marketing's not changing too much. It's just the mediums in which we use. Michael Jordan says to go and eat McDonald's, people are going to go eat McDonald's, right? But now we're at a much more of a micro level. I'm curious your thoughts on that. If you've seen like a lot of people kind of really embracing that trend, and if you see it differently than that.
Yeah, so we see the same. I think it's very difficult to decide between, I mean, you mentioned Michael Jordan, right? I mean, like mega celebrities versus nano influencers, right? I think, you know, that there should be like a package of probably a few nano influencers, micro and mid-size, probably one celebrity. I mean, people, this is what I see people, companies are doing, like building various packages in terms of influencer marketing. Definitely see the partnerships taking place. Definitely see growth on Amazon, TikTok, because they can provide like first-party data because of the purchase behaviors. Again, they're not providing you the data, they're providing you the tools so you can access those people. So it's a very delicate way of managing the data, still protecting themselves for sure. So I'm really interested on this partnerships type of activity. Okay, if you can a little bit diving into this. How is it evolving? How has it started? Are you identifying potential partners? You approach them? How do you qualify them? Because it's like, it seems like it's a different type of expertise than D2C, right?
Absolutely. The one thing I'd say that, you know, I was previously at Momentus, which, you know, I helped launch the Huberman Lab partnership with them and really kind of helped spearhead that with a great team. And the one thing I learned really heavily there is how efficient partnerships make your paid media. So for example, we could acquire a customer for $7 on Google, a new customer, just based on the efficiencies that certain partners can create in search intent, search volume around certain products, branded search volume. So these kind of unicorns is obviously a big part of the strategy if you can land one. And that's the biggest challenge, is that not everyone can land one. So then I think what you have to do is go to plan B, which is death by a thousand cuts. And you really got to find those kind of mid-tier or lower-tier influencers that are maybe 40,000 Instagram followers, or maybe the mid-tier 200,000 Instagram followers, maybe a million. Great, that's fine. Or wherever their audience is. Doesn't have to be on Instagram. It can be a blog. It can be, you know, any sort of publication. And you really have to kind of grow steadily using those rather than saying, okay, yeah, we landed a big time podcast or the number one podcast on the planet. Like, no, that's not for everybody. And that's not always going to work. Right. So for us, our partnership ecosystem is about finding hunters, outdoor enthusiasts, or, you know, kind of people that are just interested in overall health and well-being, and really working with them. So you'll find our social media is definitely full of, you know, people that are avid outdoorsmen, really like to hunt, really like to fish. That's where we spend a lot of our time. And so we just grow that bench as deep as possible with that death of a thousand cuts mentality, while we also continue on the search for who our next unicorn is. You know, we have the biggest name in our space with Cam Haynes. We have the biggest name in CrossFit with Rich Froning. We're going to continue to look for those kind of bigger mid-tier partners.
Yes.
While also building kind of a smaller bench, because our brand, you know, maybe doesn't have a unicorn in its future. Maybe it does. We have some discussions with some exciting names right now. I can't let you know what they are, but maybe maybe if you're nice, you know, we could talk about it offline.
I'll invite you again. So please.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. For sure. But that's how we approach it, I think, is really kind of building this foundational pyramid of, you know, kind of building to the point where we can say, yeah, you know, big name X influencer, X NFL player. Yeah, we can talk about, you know, here's our bench of people that you align with. You know, here's how we can speak to you.
Yes, exactly. So you're building this foundation of lower tier, few tens of thousands of followers, and then some of the big names as well. Look, what TikTok is today, I think it's the only platform that it doesn't matter how many followers you have. I mean, with one video, you can be very, very successful. But you need to create a lot of videos to find that one that actually works. And maybe you want to accelerate it with paid media as well. The one that is actually working, just this is the best way for ROAS to be really interesting around that. So, influencer marketing in various layers of packages, this is probably the right way to go. Are you doing also some partnerships, not with the creators or the influencers, but with other companies that are like retailers or online that are including your product as part of their overall, you know, supermarkets and of products?
Yeah, I'd say like we do have a CPA model in effect with some core partners as well that are in maybe non-competitive spaces. So we have partnerships with like National Wild Turkey Federation. We have partnerships with, you know, Western Hunt Expo. We're working on some partnerships potentially with Born Primitive, which is a, you know, an apparel brand. You know, we have logo wear, but we're not a direct competitor in an apparel space. It's just kind of our area. So we will definitely look for adjacent brands to work with. I think the thing that's most important to us and to our executive leadership team is that there's a buy-in with our core values. And so that's the most important thing is, we're not going to promote someone that may change our business overnight if they don't align with who we are as a company. And that's something that we will stand by as think as far as our growth trajectory is we're not going to lay down our morals just so we can, you know, potentially transact or find a revenue change drastically overnight. We're really going to stick to who we are. So that's when we look for some of those retail partners, especially, but also digitally native partners that we can do. Those are all, and they kind of have to align with those core values, which to be frank with us, like having a strong affiliation to hunting and having a strong religious background to our company does narrow our audience pretty considerably as far as who we can work with. But it's something we're proud of. So we're just going to keep doing it.
Sure, that's your special, unique sauce, unique story, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think every brand is trying to find a way to resonate with more and more and more people. And so one thing I feel super confident about our strategy is we're not trying to open up the aperture of what our brand is. Our brand is our brand, and we speak to who we speak to. We're just going to continually try to find those people and speak better to them.
Yeah. So obviously you operate in a lot of channels, you know, experimenting with a lot of things. How do you define a KPIs? I mean, what's successful and how do you aggregate the data? I mean, what tools do you use or what are the processes you have in place to analyze it? And I know you're smiling because everyone is smiling when I ask this question, but really I'd love to have your perspective on this topic.
Yeah, I have a pretty foul mouth, so I'll kind of regulate myself here when it comes to, you know, we have the same pain points I think a lot of businesses do. Yeah. Luckily, we do have Director of Business Intelligence mm-hmm. who helps in a lot of these atmospheres, but we've recently migrated from North Beam to Triple Will for attribution, mostly yeah. because we need the power of that CDP in order to kind of push audiences into the right places. We still do lean on digital media probably more than we should. So we need to be able to weaponize our first party data as much mm-hmm. as possible. So we have a few different sources of truth that we kind of migrate into one core area and one core dashboard. So we use Google Analytics as our source of truth for sessions, and we use Shopify as our source of truth for revenue. We use Triple Whale as our source of truth for attribution. So we kind of bring that unholy trinity, if you will, into one kind of central ecosystem. We use that for board reporting. We use that for our current reporting on how we make decisions and where we go about things. But I think data is always a bit of a nightmare because one thing, I mean, even our CEO the other day was asking, why is our Shopify conversion rate so drastically different than our Google conversion rate? And I was like, here we go again. We got one. Yeah, I've answered this question for 6 years straight now. So this is great. But yeah. It's always good to field questions like that, though, because it kind of forces you to know your data inside and out.
It's one of the things I say, okay, just analyze it. Give me the bottom lines, right? I mean, it's like it's a lot of process to understand what's really happening, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Right here you have this business intelligence position in the company. Mm-hmm. But then once you see the data, you need to have kind of a culture of adaptability, agility to move very, very fast and, you know, to have this agility in place. It's got kind of a cross-company behavior, right, or culture.
Absolutely. It's one thing I give my team, my marketing team, a ton of credit for is they are extremely nimble and in ways that we can adjust and pivot. They're also blindly trusting. I don't know why they trust me. Like, I'm full of shit. Really? Like, why are you doing anything that I say to you? But
look, I trust you. I mean, after 20 minutes, I really trust you. Okay, I have a very good questions on this trust factor, but please go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think, but they're blindly trusting, but they're also, they're extremely nimble and they're able to adjust and adapt on the fly. And we do, I mean, we saw some massive shifts in Q4 last year. Not positively. We were able to make some adjustments to that into Q1 this year and really, turn the tide in certain areas. And so, we've done so much in the last few months alone. We launched a new website because we weren't on a Shopify 2.0 theme and we really didn't have the ability to spin up landing pages efficiently. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of kind of some of the basic stuff that I would say to execute even a simple marketing strategy. So we've really... moved thick and fast into some stuff that I think has been uncomfortable for a lot of our team, but it's starting to really turn some solid results for us. Oh.
I want to tell you why people are trusting you. Okay. According to my 20 minutes observation, right. And some of the prep call we did, I think you are very, very down to earth, right? You look at the data, you analyze it like without any emotion involved, no egoless, right? Know how to prioritize between what's working and what's not. Focus on the strongest thing and make them stronger. Like you're really into the basics, which is very, very important in this era, right? Where most of the brands are looking for profitability and growth together. So it requires a more operational way of management, right? Less high level vision and, you know, penetrating new markets or experimenting with a lot of, with millions of dollars, but really down to earth. And it seems to me you don't have the classical background of a VP of marketing. I mean, probably your journey was a little bit different, right? So I would love to hear more about that.
I would say it's very unconventional.
Yeah.
I have a very fortunate path of, I've been able to make it pretty high up in two career paths before the age of 40, which is cool. And it's something I am proud about. It's not something I brag about by any means, because it was probably pretty stupid what I did in right around 30 years old. But yeah, my background was I started I started my career as a coach and as a youth soccer coach was my core background. So I started really coaching when I was about 16 years old.
Wow.
And that's kind of where I kicked off that portion of that career. And so I went through all my licensure at a pretty early age. So I was able to get my U.S. Soccer Federation C license at the age of 21, which was kind of unheard of back in 2010. So I was really young at the time to be able to kind of get some of those qualifications, went through more qualifications into my early 20s as well. Worked here locally in Boise, Idaho for, multiple clubs and kind of took on that realm, was eventually able to go and coach in college showcase tournaments at the age of 24, coaching against the number two team in the nation. That was, really exciting at the time.
Wow.
And then I left to move to Denver. So I spent about 3 years in Denver where I took over a youth club and worked with an awesome team there. It's still probably the most proud I've been of anything I've done in my career is the ability to just truly make an impact for that club, but also make a difference in some kids' lives is great. So I think to put in perspective, I took over as director of coaching for that club at the age of 26. The next closest person in that role with the club our size was like 41, so it was like 15 years younger at that point, and it forced me to grow up fast because I still think I'm an idiot, but I was definitely an idiot back then. It forced me to grow up and learn how to be a professional, learn how to do OKR settings, and it was also where I first really started to learn to get how to get into marketing as well. So I spent 3 years there. I moved back to Boise. I started coaching in college here. And it was at that time, I was about 30 years old, where I said, this has been an incredible ride, but I don't think it's going to be the long-term future for me. If this is Boise, Idaho is where I want to be and where my life is going to be, this is probably not going to be the long-term career path.
Yeah.
So I hit the nuclear bomb button on that and blew up my career. And you would think somebody would look at like some of the accomplishments that I was able to have before 30 as like, oh yeah, we should hire this guy. No, the second they saw my resume on paper, I think they just saw, oh, this guy's a soccer coach. I don't know what that means. On to the next one. And which is fair, is totally fair. So I had to go through the painstaking efforts basically of starting from the bottom. So I went to I started as a copywriter. I was taking on any freelance work I can do. So, you're kind of going from the top of the top of the youth soccer world to now making $15 an hour as a copywriter. And so it was a massive, massive change for me. But it was incredibly needed. It was a wonderful, humbling experience. It was incredibly challenging. I worked my way from a copywriter got my first big break as a retention marketer, working for 5 different supplement brands, helping to launch with some big influencers as well. So Tim Kennedy and Relentless and his supplement brands was able to help get that up off the ground, run the retention marketing channels for 5 different brands. Moved into an Amazon role back here in Boise. So worked for an Amazon accelerator for a year, cut my teeth on everything that I could, all things Amazon related. At that point, I'd had retention marketing, copywriting, Amazon experience. The one thing I felt I was missing was paid media and digital experience. So I took a job at an agency, kind of rounded out that portion of it. So at that point, I had affiliate, I had retention, I had Amazon, kind of had everything. And then I got my other big break as a director of marketing for Momentous. So I came on to Momentous, worked under a wonderful CMO there, and then eventually took over as the most senior marketing person on that team, launching the Huberman Lab partnership, growing that company 12x, or definitely not me, but helping to grow that company 12x in about a year. And that was an incredibly wonderful experience there as well. And then frankly, just to speak frankly, the growth that we had outgrew my skill sets. I wasn't able to kind of be the person to lead marketing at that level anymore. And I think the executive team and I, we all aligned on that. That's what brought me to Mountain Ops. And now, started here as a director of marketing. Now I'm a VP of marketing. So I've been able to kind of, start from the bottom of copywriter and in 6 years kind of make my way to VP, which has been really exciting, really rewarding, but also I got a lot of gray hairs, man. I definitely get a lot of stress for sure.
Yeah, we all are, right? So
yeah.
Wow, really amazing journey. Thank you for sharing this. Really inspiring, I think, for a lot of professionals out there. You can always change and make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. I've been fortunate to be blessed with a lot of opportunity. I don't think a lot of people are. I don't think there's anything special about me or what I do. I just happen to have doors opened up to me. And if somebody's going to open up a door to me, I'm going to kick it down and do everything I can to make the most out of it. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to have those chances. Not everybody gets that.
Yes, yes. So how do you see the current macroeconomic, status right in the US? What are the changes that happened last probably a couple of years, and how do you see this evolving in 2024?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting from a Mountain Ops perspective to have the discussion too, because our audience isn't traditionally very affluent, and that's good. We like to speak to those people because a lot of those people don't have access to proper nutrition or good health opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And so for us, we started seeing this around Q4 of last year where, as the macroeconomic conditions shift and get traditionally more negative, those with less money have less money to spend on things, right? So we saw that in Q3, Q4 of last year, started to feel the pinch of a little bit of that. We did see a massive boost in Black Friday, Cyber Monday sales as well because of that kind of revenge spending that I think a lot of people experienced. And buy now, pay later was huge during that time, continues to be just because of that ability to defer payments. I think right now it was like $8 billion or something I saw over the holiday season was spent on buy now, pay later. So it was a massive uptick. But that also created a big hangover effect into January and early February. And we ran a sale right at the beginning of January. We had pretty big projections for it. Mm-hmm. And the customer appetite just was not there because I think they were still recovering from holiday kind of revenge spending. So that was super interesting for us. And then now here we're kind of starting to see a little bit of a level out to a degree. So consumer sentiment is a little bit more positive. It's not as harrowing maybe as it was in late December, early January, late February. So we're starting to see some signs of life. I think obviously in the US here, rate cuts are definitely kind of a big topic of whether or not those will happen and they won't happen. I think wage growth is definitely going to be baked into some of the inflation metrics. And so hopefully that means consumer sentiment stays strong. We're able to actually have people that want to buy our products that will buy the products. So I think overall the challenge is when things do get pinched, what do you do? And for us, I think what we decided was focus hard on retention, focus on the customers that we've acquired, focus on making their experiences more meaningful, making them deeper, giving them better access to better products, getting them access to try new things. Because I think what the age-old adage of business is, it's way easier to retain a customer and way cheaper to retain a customer than it is to acquire one, right? So would I rather spend $60 for a new customer, or would I rather spend 6 cents and really kind of invest in that relationship? And so we've made a strong pivot to focusing hard on retention and really developing deeper relationships with those customers. And it's been super beneficial. We've also completely overhauled our acquisition strategy, and it's worked out really well. We're kind of focusing more towards core products. We're focusing more towards brand narrative rather than just acquiring on discount, rather than acquiring on kind of some of these more fickle things. We're focusing on, do you love the brand? Do you love what we stand for? And I think we're seeing the results of better retention from that too.
Yes, yes. I'd love to talk about retention. What exactly do you do there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was able to move one of our employees into a retention marketing role not too long ago, and he manages email, SMS, push notifications. We do have a TapCart mobile app. So he works closely with our e-commerce marketing manager to kind of manage some of those promotions. We're really working more on kind of more fundamental marketing, I would say, as far as developing automations for a lot of this. So we don't have maybe some of the robust web of kind of customer journeys that a lot of brands our size do. We don't traditionally have those built out. So really what we're focusing on is if a customer takes an action on our site or they engage with something, what conversation are we having with them? It's kind of like the real, you know, peeling back all the marketing speak is cool. If you fill out a form on our site, if you check out a product, if you, you know, abandon cart, all those kind of things. But if you buy a certain product, what kind of messaging are we giving you with those? We're really honing in on those channels for retention and then those messages in those channels for sure. SMS is obviously crushes it for us as it does most people. I will be honest, our email unsubscribe rate is the lowest of any brand that I've worked with. Our SMS unsubscribe rate is the lowest of any brand I've worked with. We're, geez, under 0.2% on most SMS unsubscribe rates.
So, this is why. It's because you probably provide more value, more content, less pushy.
Exactly. Yeah. And people also know, they can find a, they can find a good deal on those channels every now and then. So, and that's, I think, something we're totally comfortable with. But yeah, we focus hard on those channels. And then I think some of our organic social narrative plays into that too, and what we're putting out there and how we're supporting our community through that.
Yes. Oh, I mean, it's very interesting. Marketing is amazing domain, right? Total, I mean, ongoing experimentation, what's working and what's not. And are you one of those that reads every customer reviews and every support ticket? I mean, you have this one-on-one type of experience that you're looking for, or just looking at the high level trends?
There are moments where I will go into direct feedback. Those are mostly survey related, and that's a question that I'm specifically asking. Luckily, we have an awesome customer service team that's all in-house, so we don't outsource any of that. They work in our Utah office right next to the gym, and you know, listening to weights crash around all day long in our really nice gym. They provide great feedback to our team as far as what customers are saying about us, what their big pain points are. And I think our COO and the ops team takes a strong degree of passion to making sure that those customers are taken care of in the right way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are always questions, I think most marketers are, but there are always questions that I want to be able to ask our audience. For me, I've actually found the best way to do it is at events. So I was recently at an event back here in February, mid-February or so. I missed Valentine's Day. My wife was cool with it, so she gets another big bonus point for that one. But during that event, I asked every single customer, you know, what they thought about our new website, you know, what they think about certain product releases, you know, how are they engaging with the brand. And that's where I can really get kind of one-to-one feedback is, you know, if I'm at an event, let's just talk to someone who's actually buying or is an ambassador and has been with the brand for years and have an actual conversation rather than like, you know, something behind a keyboard. It's been really beneficial.
Yes. There's a lot of articles and discussion lately about the changing role of the CMO or the VP marketing. Right. I mean, because of this current status that we are in, how do you see your job description probably evolves, you know, throughout the years?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure last time I worked off of a job description anyway. So, and that's not a critique of anybody in general, but I will say, I mean, marketing touches all facets of the business, right? So it touches ops, it touches customer service, it touches product. And, you know, I don't have to explain that to your listeners. They're, you know, they're more well-versed in that. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, the one thing that's been able to give me a leg up and help me get to where I'm at in my role is I approach marketing from a business standpoint anyway. And I'm more of business focused on how, you know, how we go about that. One of the things that you brought up a little bit earlier was growing and growing profitably. And that's something that I've been pushing for my, you know, first year here is we should be focusing on as a brand that only grows by attracting 15 to 18% new customers a month. We should be focusing deeply on profitable growth rather than trying to, you know, scale that new customer growth as aggressively as possible. Our brand just isn't built for that. We're really driving sustainable growth. So let's do it sustainably by having, you know, preserving EBITDA, making sure that we're spending in the right places and investing in the right atmospheres for sure.
Yeah.
And that to me, like maybe in the past wasn't necessarily a VP of marketing role. It might be a CFO that throws that at you. But for me, it's, I treat this business as if I run it, and I want to be able to be smart with our money and make sure that we are growing profitably.
Because I mean, if you're a CMO, you want more budget, you want more spend, right? But in order to grow profitably, you need to probably freeze like the actual cost and think about other innovative way where you can increase performance, maybe increase conversion rate by, you know, 0.5%, maybe opening another channel of partnerships, working with, you know, better influencers, or try to come up with those creative ideas that increase sales but keeps the cost structure in place.
Right. Yeah, and even from an ops perspective, like if we gain 2 points of margin in our products, well, cool, that's more money that we can potentially spend into marketing if we do it that way, or we can, you know, send straight to the bottom line.
Yes,
those kind of things directly impact the overall marketing channel. And so I think CMOs, VPs of marketing, I think they're becoming much more business operators than they are just focusing on creative execution of a brand, right?
Yes.
And so I think that that's fortunately suits me really well, and something I'm not the greatest in all the other things, but I believe, you know, I can at least help with some business decisions, and I've been able to do that, and that's been cool.
Yeah, I mean, P&L is working in a very nice way, because if you're improving any of those parameters that we mentioned, like on the product side, reducing the cost a little bit, or even conversion rates, I mean, every even small fraction can obviously increase more sales. But if you're increasing sales in 10%, you're improving margin, like EBITDA, by probably 20 to 30%, right? That's the beauty of the way things are working. And plenty of things to explore around this area.
Yeah. I mean, we have to look at headcount as it pertains to that too. We have to look at, you know, whether or not our team is spread across the right amount of channels, or if there's, you know, redundancies in place, and where we can reinvest some of those areas to get more of that growth for sure. Yeah. It's much more of a, you know, business operator is what I'd say, as opposed to just a, you know, CMO, VP of marketing.
Yes. I mean, look, I mean, it's good. It's good for companies. It's good for the industry. It might take 5 years, 7 years for this type of atmosphere to take place. You know, I've been discussing with some of the, you know, growth advisory firm, M&A firms. Maybe it will take 8 years for this, but companies will come very, very strong from this period. And this next wave of growth and increased valuation will come very obviously, but from a much stronger fundamentals and way to operate businesses, right? Profitability as a North Star. Neil, great. Anything else you want to add?
No, man, it's just been a pleasure being able to kind of chat marketing with you.
Yeah.
I think, it's a wonderful world to be in right now. It's definitely always got its challenges, which I think is probably the most rewarding part for me. Is, you know, if I get bored with something, then cool. You know, that's not going to work for me. And so the ability to be in and learn from people like yourselves, learn from your listeners, and also just absorb as much information, I think is always been awesome. But yeah, no, it's been a super positive experience.
Great. So assuming you are now in a meeting with some other colleagues, you know, VP marketing, CMOs, right? Everyone comes with their own experience, with their own knowledge and stuff. What are some of the tips that from your experience, probably 2-3 tips you can provide?
Yeah, one of the things that I think is most important to me, and a close mentor and a close friend of mine kind of really touches on how marketing people go deep in marketing speak, right? And for me, with the coaching background, like I had to be able to break things down to a fourth grade level on how to explain something complex, whether it's technical in nature, right?
Very
and
difficult.
So for me, the true understanding of marketing is if you can explain it at a fourth grade level. And so I think it would be, you know, definitely wise for people in our ecosystem to really look about how we talk about our business, how we talk about CAC to LTV ratios and blended ROAS and tacos and all these kind of other, you know, core metrics. Like, are we just really blinding people with science, or are we getting to the core of what we're trying to say? And I think that that's something that goes a long way, because if you talk in so much marketing speak, you can be talking straight over someone's head and they can feel alienated very quickly, right? And they're going to shut down. But if you're able to actually like help them understand what these things are that they're hearing in all of these, you know, conferences and all of these other areas, it makes a huge difference if you can really break it down. And then the other thing I'd say is just, you know, be humble to continue to growing new things and learning new things. What's going to resonate now, 5 years from now, is going to be totally different, right? Like, it's not even going to be relevant in some of the stuff. So we, I think, always have to be learning, always have to be growing. That's cliche for sure, but that's something that is 100% true in my mind.
Yes, yes. Great, Neil. It was really a lot of fun. Thank you for all the knowledge and the experience. It's really, really interesting. Wish you an amazing year, 2024, and also following years. I think you're definitely sounds like you're in the right track. And where people can find you?
They can find us at mountainops.com. Where they can find me is, you don't want to find me. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm on LinkedIn. You're welcome to reach out to me there with any kind of thoughts or questions you might have.
Amazing. Thank you, Neil. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.